Hello and welcome to the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. If we haven't met yet, then I'm Claire. I'm a registered nutritionist and I also have a degree in exercise science as well. And I have PCOS too, so I know how the symptoms, how annoying they are. But I also know that we can do so much in terms of changing our lifestyle to suit our bodies. What I mean by our bodies is that we're not the same. We all are different with PCOS, but we've got to figure out for us what's going on, and then we can actually put the right lifestyle plan in place to help with those symptoms. So this is a mini pod Q&A podcast, so where you guys have submitted some questions via Instagram stories and I answer them. So this week I had a lot actually about exercise, so I thought we'd go through kind of the exercise ones first. The first one, I can't actually see your name on your profile, so I can't say who that is, sorry, but question was, what type of exercise is better, what type's worse, and is there any that we should always avoid? Really good question. So I think overall when it comes to exercise, there's no exercise that's inherently bad, right? I think this is something to point out. It all depends on you. So I know I talk about this quite a lot, about the sort of over-exercising component, because this is my personal experience as an athlete and also as someone who struggled with weight and was, you know, trying to manage that by doing more and more exercise and being thinking that that was the right thing to do when it wasn't. So for me, I have quite a different story, and I probably see a lot of women who have a similar story because they hear mine and go, oh my God, I think I'm the same. So I'm probably a little bit biased in that perspective. But when it comes to, you know, I'm not saying that because I was a runner or triathlete or because I did CrossFit that any of those are bad, okay? They can all be fantastic. It's when your stress bucket is already too full. And what I talk about this in our PCOS protocol program is that we all have, we don't have a finite capacity for stress. So our body cannot just manage more and more and more and more and more stress. And exercise is a stressor on the body, especially endurance and high intensity exercise. Okay, that is a stressor on the body. And so if you've already got a really full stress bucket, like imagine that we only have this bucket, we're going to put so much stress in there. If you already, you know, if you just live in, say, an urban environment in a city, your stress bucket is probably already half full just because of the lifestyle that we tend to adopt when we live in an urban environment. It's kind of go, go, go. If you work in a, you know, in most jobs, and especially in a professional career, then again, your stress bucket is already probably going to be quite full. If you're studying, if you're doing master's, PhD, if you're studying and working, if you're working multiple jobs, if you've had financial stress over COVID, if you've just been isolating for many weeks on end, that can all increase that stress. And I think the problem arises is when our stress bucket is overflowing. So basically you put too much in there. So say you already, you know, have a high stress job or you're studying, and then you go and add in, I don't know, 6 CrossFit sessions a week plus 3 runs, and suddenly that stress bucket is overflowing, and your body will cope with that for a while and it'll just keep going, but it can only do that for so long. And then what will happen is that the communication between your brain and your adrenal glands, which sit above your kidneys, and they are what release your stress hormones, that communication will actually get a bit disrupted. And this is what used to be called adrenal fatigue. It's now called HPA axis dysfunction. So if you want to look that up any further, but that is, yeah, that's basically what's happening. And what that can mean is that your tolerance for exercise just isn't there. You know, you're no longer recovering from exercise like you should be. You're not sleeping very well. Maybe you struggle to get to sleep, or maybe you feel like really, really exhausted when you wake up in the morning, even though you know you've had a good sleep. Maybe you're waking up during the night. Maybe you, instead of it taking sort of 10 minutes for you to recover from a workout, it's taking you hours. Maybe you feel like you need to sleep for hours after you've worked out. All of those symptoms can be a really good sign that actually what you're doing isn't, your stress hormones aren't coping with that. And I think when that's the case, then it gets to the point where I'm like, well, maybe what you're doing isn't the right thing for you. So it's not that there is anything that should always be avoided, but it's just that it really depends on you and what's going on in your life and how you're tolerating that exercise at the moment. In terms of what can be better, that comes back to what's going on for you. So what I term the root causes for you. So if you've listened to these podcasts for a while, you know I always harp on about the root cause, because this is my philosophy about how we actually figure out what's going to be most helpful for you in terms of your lifestyle treatments. So if you have insulin issues, which 80% of us do, then we want to actually use exercise, if we can, to help improve our insulin sensitivity so that our body doesn't produce as much insulin. And one of the best forms of exercise to do this is strength training. So if someone, if I saw that someone had some insulin issues, I'd be saying to them, hey, well, how do you feel about doing some strength exercise? If they're like, actually, I already, I love doing Zumba 3 times a week and I do yoga 2x a week and I go for a couple of runs and that's what I really love doing, I'm like, sweet, go for gold. You do what works for you. But if you want to do something, maybe swap out a couple of those sessions and do, 2 strength training sessions, maybe we could help your insulin more. If you're up for that, great. If you're not, then keep doing what you're doing, because that is fantastic as well. So it's always, it's always a bit of a trade-off between, I would way rather that you do something that you love and you can do, rather than try and push you into something that you don't enjoy and therefore you just don't end up doing it. So it's always a bit of a trade-off. And sometimes, a lot of forms of exercise, especially strength training, most people don't enjoy it at the start because it feels awkward. They don't know what they're doing. They, go into the gym or, do a home workout and they're like, oh God, I feel so uncoordinated, or I don't know how these machines work. That's okay. Everyone goes through that phase. So you kind of need to push through that phase of, sort of a month or so. But if you're really not enjoying it after, say, 3 or 6 months, that's probably where you go, actually, I'm way better sticking with the exercise that I enjoy, so long as you can tolerate it. Okay. So long as that it's, it's not, okay, I really enjoy running 3 hours a day, but my adrenals are stuffed and I can't get out of bed in the morning. Okay, then that's a different story. So that is, that's my kind of take on that exercise side. JL, your question was, can I do sports like cross country? Again, that goes back to that above question, which is, how are you tolerating at the moment? So how are your stress hormones? Are they tolerating the amount of exercise that you're doing? A lot of people can, great. If not, if those questions I went through before in terms of how long it takes you to recover from exercise, how's your sleep? If you answered no to any of those or yes to any of those, then maybe that needs to be reviewed, or the training load needs to be reviewed. But on the whole, if that's good and you are recovering well, then it should be fine for a lot of people. Your second part of your question is, will PCOS affect my ability to improve running? No, it won't. It'll actually potentially make it easier. So most women with PCOS have higher androgen levels, which is like the male hormones. That means that you're going to be actually have a bit of a performance advantage here. You're more likely to be able to grow muscle mass. Your endurance is probably going to be better than other women. So use that to your advantage. Also, learn how to work with your cycle. So what I mean by that is your menstrual cycle. So in the first part of your menstrual cycle, you have high levels of estrogen, and that means that you're going to be, that's where you're going to hit your PBs or your personal records, personal bests. It's going to be where you do your best kind of explosive power training. That's the kind of time that you want to be trying to be doing your races or be doing your time trials to get your personal best. After you've ovulated, then the 2 weeks after that, before you get your period, that's where you're going to struggle a little bit. So in that week straight after ovulation, that's more where you want to prioritize your endurance training. And then the week leading up to your period, that's where you really want to prioritize your recovery. So I'm hoping that you're doing a cyclical training where you are training for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks and having a week where you're recovering. And if you work that in with your cycle, generally it works pretty well. If you're not getting a cycle at the moment, work on that, because that is going to help you with your performance. If you can get your period back, then that's going to be very, very helpful for performance. If you're on hormonal contraception, I would advise that you follow a woman called Dr. Stacey Sims. I mentioned her in the podcast earlier in the week about hormonal birth control. And I mentioned a bit specifically for athletes at the end there, and how she's been doing some fantastic research along with many other researchers as well about why hormones are actually a performance advantage for females and why we shouldn't just switch them off using hormonal birth control and instead we should work with them. So follow her and understand how you can use your cycle to your advantage. And if you're not getting a cycle, you need to get that back. Well, I would anyway, as an athlete. I wish I'd known this years ago when I was competing internationally, but I'd be trying to figure out why. So working with someone that can figure this out. Is it insulin? Is it stress hormones? Is it that you're just not eating enough? What's called low energy availability. And this is the new way that we understand why female athletes can lose their period. It's not about having too low body fat. It's actually about having too little energy available for the amount of work you're demanding your body to do. So that can be a really big reason as well, and can often go hand in hand with high stress hormones and also insulin. So it doesn't necessarily just have to be one or the other. So I would, either find someone to work with or come and join us in the PCOS protocol. Just really, if you want to be getting the maximum out of your training, maximum out of your racing, then I think it's a really good idea to try and work with your cycle rather than just switching it off and working against it. Suka, I think that's how I say your name. Which type of yoga is best? I'd say any type. I'm really not the expert in yoga, but I think the fantastic thing about it is that it is a great resistance training. You're using your body weight in so many of the poses, so can be very, very helpful with that. And also you can do your sort of more yin yoga, which is great for kind of calming and restorative as well. So I'd say a bit of a combination is a great idea. Any videos to follow? I'm really not the best person to ask. I am not a yoga person. So go and ask some people who are great. But I would say a good combination of some strength, power vinyasa type yoga and then your yin yoga would be a really good combination. Erin, question from you. How do I keep from quitting before I see results? Oh my God. I think, Erin, if we could answer this, we would be billionaires. But no, seriously, I think what I've seen for me and a lot of women that I work with, it really comes down to if you understand why you're making the changes. So this is why, another reason why I'm so hot on trying to identify that kind of root cause, because if you can see from, say, blood test results that you have insulin resistance, then the kind of changes that I would get you to make are changes that are pretty much going to be with you for life in order to help your long-term health. So in order for you to prevent getting type 2 diabetes and reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease and cancers and other kind of chronic health conditions that we know are linked to high blood glucose and insulin. So if you know, okay, holy shit, I am on that fast track to a lot of these chronic health conditions and I know I'm going to have to, you know, live like this for most of my life, I personally think it's a lot easier because you know exactly why you're doing it. It's not just like, oh yeah, well, I've read this thing and it says that I should stop eating potatoes or I don't know, whatever crap, you know, there is out there. And you do it for a while and then you're like, I've done this for a couple of weeks. I'm not seeing any difference. So I don't think that potatoes actually make that much difference. Whereas if you can see, okay, yes, no, I understand my insulin is high. That is, you know, also not only just predisposing me to a lot of those other chronic conditions, but is also how that's making your symptoms worse, then you can understand why the science of what you eat can affect that. And then it makes a huge difference in being able to stick with that, I believe anyway. And I know that that's been the case for a lot of women that I've worked with, is that when they understand why they're doing something, they're way more likely to stick with it. So I put a huge amount of emphasis in the PCOS protocol in doing just that and explaining exactly why you're making the change, it, what the scientific rationale behind it is, so that you can say, right, I can see it clear on paper, my insulin's high, there's no denying it. I can see here from the research why this is helpful in improving insulin. So therefore, I can make that conclusion to myself that it's going to be worthwhile me sticking at this. And that then, you know, even if you don't see, you know, changes with your PCOS symptoms for the first, you know, even for months on end, you'll still know that it's improving in terms of your long-term health, and therefore it's worthwhile sticking with it. So that is my personal philosophy. I'm sure that there is like a lot of, you know, a lot of psychology experts out there who will have a lot of other different tips and tricks, but that's just my personal way that I do it as well. And last question quickly, Clancy, blood test came back normal yet still have issues, what's going on? Most common reason here, Clancy, obviously quite a few things, but most common reason that I see is that that you just haven't had the most sensitive test performed. For example, if it's like HbA1, you know, for example, if they're looking for your insulin, your doctor might say, oh, we'll do an HbA1c or a fasting blood glucose or even a fasting insulin. But all of those often don't pick up the early changes in insulin, which are enough to cause things like weight gain and hair growth and acne and hair loss. So it's always about understanding what tests are going to show that, and then if you do the most sensitive ones and it's still not showing that, then we can go, great, well, we know that it's not that now, and move on and try and figure out what else it could be. But generally that would be the first point to make sure that those are the most sensitive tests are being done. That's it for today. Hope that helped. We'll be back next week with another full podcast on non-hormonal contraception. So that's the next part of the three-part series on contraception. So all of your non-hormonal choices, the pros, cons, and yeah, basically how it works, what it does in the body, and then anything about that's relevant for PCOS symptoms as well. So I hope that you're enjoying that series, and hope that this helped with your questions, guys. Remember to look out for our question box on Instagram stories. We're just at the PCOS Nutritionist, no dots, no spaces, just one word. And we'll pop that up generally through the week. It's generally about a Wednesday that we do that. So look out for that then and pop your question in. Thanks so much. Bye. Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.